Good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Hope you're having a fantastic day so far. We got a lot on tap. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, he covers the NHL for them, their senior writer. He will join us at the bottom of the hour. But Ryan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Chaser. How are you on this fine Wednesday?
I once again am having that moment where I wake up and it's Monday, and the next thing I know, it's Wednesday. The weeks just fly by during
hump
this
day?
The hump day during this quarantine. It's just weird, but hey, I'm not complaining. That means a lot's going on, and time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. So, well said.
That's how I feel about it. The latest on Jadeveon Clowney. Where are we in Clowney watch? Well, nowhere. Nothing has really changed with that as of this moment. Now, we know on Monday there was a 3 o'clock deadline that had to, that once that passed, you didn't have to worry about compensatory picks anymore. So that's all gone now. But Jared and the GM, with Jared Stillman and Floyd Reese, they had John Clayton from ESPN 710 in Seattle. We talked about him yesterday. We played a clip of him, but he joined their show. How legit is Jadeveon Clowney to the Titans? This is what he had to say.
No, I think it's legit because, you know, he's blown it as far as the way he's negotiated, because here he comes out and he asked for more than $20 million. And again, this is the sixth or seventh best edge rusher in football. He was fantastic for Seattle last year, but here's where the problem is. He's not a sack guy. He's a guy who's never had double sack seasons. Double digits. He has an injury history, which, of course, has been really holding him up in this 20 games in 6 years, but he's a great player. And so any addition that he goes on is a good one. But here's the problem is that he's done the negotiation so bad, it's like a missed sack, you know, because he was asking for $22 to $23 million. That didn't happen. 2 weeks into free agency, he lowers everything to $17 million. That was too late. And then, of course, it came at the time where now he can't go get a physical. And there's no way anybody's going to sign him without a physical. And because of that, I mean, you know, she can get an agreement, but then if he goes to the team and fails the physical because he's coming off core surgery, who knows what else he has. I mean, he started his career in the NFL with a microfracture. But again, an addition like that, particularly for a 4-3 team, he is really, really good. He was sensational last year. Plus, he was dedicated enough for his team and everybody else to play in November, play through a core surgery that he knew he had to get surgery because he went to Dr. Anderson in Philadelphia, and you don't even leave the office before the knife comes out and they start cutting into you. So, I think he'd be a great addition. I just kind of question if it's going to happen, and I question it a lot.
He questions it a lot if it's in fact going to happen for the Tennessee Titans and Jadeveon Clowney. Well, he brought up the whole physical part, which John Robinson alluded to the other day when I asked him the question about Jadeveon Clowney, that, you know, it's like, well, you know, got to get with the doctors, and it's hard to get with the doctors right now. So that's a very real thing. We've seen different scenarios that have, it could be the summer, it could be closer to training camp before Clowney signs anywhere. But what do you make of what John Clayton just said there, Ryan?
Well, he made it sound like that there's not going to be a resolution to this anytime soon because of the importance of the medicals with Jadeveon Clowney, which is what we've been saying really the last few weeks ever since it perked up again, the reports that the Titans may be in on Jadeveon Clowney. If I gave you an over-under, Chase, of Memorial Day weekend of Jadeveon Clowney being signed to Seattle, Tennessee, or another team, are you taking the over or the under on that?
I think I'm going over.
Me too.
Based on everything that I've heard over the last few days, whether it's from the GM himself, John Robinson, or what John Clayton has said now on this station and on his station in Seattle, I think I have to lean towards the over. I don't see it getting resolved anytime soon.
I completely agree. I think this is going to go right up until whenever training camps start, or maybe a month out from training camps. Who knows? Maybe, you know, NFL facilities can start letting some individuals in and they can take some physicals. Even then, you know, I think you have to see where Jadeveon Clowney's price tag is. If Clowney is still pricing himself at, you know, $17 million, then I don't know if I really want to touch that. If it's 15 or below, then, you know, I'm a lot more willing and more desperate to get Clowney on this roster. But, yeah, I would take the over on Memorial Day weekend. As much as the talk over the weekend after the NFL draft when the Titans didn't pick a pass rusher was, all right, up next it's Clowney, I think we both agree. We don't think that this is going to happen overnight.
No, because it probably would have already. The biggest hurdle that – well, I mean, the price. You got to figure out how much he really, really is going to be willing to take. But you've now gotten past that compensatory pick deadline, so that's big. That's, you know, that helps you there. But, yeah, I think without being able to get him in front of your doctor, like face-to-face, not this teledoc or Zoom or anything like that, actually get him in front of the doctor – they're not going to do anything, and I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all because there are major concerns from an injury standpoint. Now, I stand firm that, you know, I want him here, that I believe that Jadeveon Clowney would be a good fit here, get him here on a one-year deal. You know, I said yesterday that I agree with, you know, if you go 2 years, $30 million fully guaranteed, I would do it. I stand by that, but I also understand that you want to make sure that he's in tip-top shape and he's not going to just break as soon as he gets, you know, in Nashville. So I think you have to do your due diligence.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. But I think it's all – the Jadeveon Clowney's free agency status will all be predicated on when NFL facilities can reopen and doctors can, like you said, have face-to-face meetings, get a physical with him, and then – you know, maybe a deal is worked out before then, maybe it's not, but I just don't see any movement on that front before Memorial Day weekend, which means we're going to be sitting here and talking about Clowney for a long time this spring.
So is the Titans defense is currently constructed good enough to help them take the next step? Do they need Jadeveon Clowney to be able to take the next step, meaning win a division, get past the Chiefs, get past – in this division, you do have to get past the Texans. You have to have somebody that can get to the quarterback. Is it good enough as currently constructed? I asked that question while we sit here and wait on what Jadeveon Clowney is going to do because NFL.com came out with their power rankings. And, Ryan, after the draft, they have the Titans fifth best team in the NFL. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not buying that. I'm not ready to put them there.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. You have a top tier of the Chiefs, Ravens in the AFC, and the Saints and 49ers in the NFC. Those, I think we can all agree, are the top four teams in the NFL, whichever order you might want to put them in. Would you agree with that?
I think the Bucs have something to say about it. I mean, look.
Right, but don't know what it's going to look like. That is the issue with Tampa Bay. Yes, they have a collection of talent now and the GOAT at quarterback, but we don't know what that's going to look like, right?
We don't, but you put Tom Brady on a team with, by the way, the underrated person in all of this is Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians is a hell of a football coach. So you put Tom Brady with him, with Gronk, with the weapons that they have around him. Listen, we don't know what it's going to look like. That's fine. I understand that, but I still probably have them above the Titans.
Tampa Bay is 12th in NFL.com's power rankings.
I disagree with that.
12th. I'm surprised Tampa Bay was not in the top 10 in these rankings. But my point is, after the top four, there is a discussion to be had. And the Titans are probably within that discussion, right? If you want to throw Tampa Bay in that discussion outside of Tier 1, I am not putting Tampa Bay in Tier 1 until I see them on the field. Kansas City, Baltimore, San Fran, New Orleans. Then it's open after that. I think you can have the discussion of the Titans being number five. I think you can have the discussion of Buffalo, Dallas. Buffalo and Dallas, 6 and 7 in NFL.com's latest power rankings. I think Tampa Bay could be in that discussion if Tom Brady takes a step forward from his production in New England last year. I think Minnesota could be in that discussion, and they would be firmly in that discussion if they had a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins.
I like them where they are at 10th. I think okay, for the people at home, here's just real quick. These are the rankings from NFL.com. Chiefs, 49ers, Ravens, Saints, Titans, Bills 6, Cowboys, Packers, Colts, Vikings. That's your top 10.
Yep.
Steelers, Bucks, Seahawks, Eagles, Patriots.
And then the Texans coming in at 16. So when you look at the AFC South, Titans 5, Colts 9, Texans 16, and you have to scroll way down to get to Jacksonville, who is at 32.
I don't necessarily disagree with the rest. Now, well, maybe have the Panthers a little higher. But everything else, yeah. I mean, Jags, 32.
The Panthers are currently at 29. I would have the Broncos higher than 21. I think the Broncos. But obviously, huge question mark at quarterback with Drew Lock. But the question being, do we feel like the Titans are a top five team in the National Football League? And with the losses that they have sustained this offseason, I'm hard-pressed to say that they are indeed a top five team.
I don't think they are. Not yet. Like, I go back to, they were six before the draft. I go back to the fact that they did not address pass rush in the draft. They didn't address it. So we're sitting here waiting on Jadeveon Clowney, and then everybody's thinking, okay, well, if they get Clowney, then you're going to feel a lot better. Okay, well, what if they don't? Like, I still think they're going to get him. I still think this is real. But what if they don't? Then what do you do? Marcus Golden? Okay. But
well, the Giants just put the free agent tender on Golden, extending the comp pick timeline for him until early May.
Yeah, so you're probably not going to do that unless you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs waiting on Clowney and then you just give up.
I think, Chase, we're sitting here in June having the pass rusher conversation.
I think we are too. And that alone is the reason why I can't say they're a top five team. Because they're basically going to roll out the same pass rush with the addition of Vic Beasley that they had in the AFC Championship game where they couldn't even sniff the quarterback. Mm-hmm. They can't get to the quarterback. That's a problem. Patrick Mahomes made it look easy at times. I'm sitting there in the press box with a bird's eye view. I have a great view, and I'm sitting next to Floyd Reese, and we're both having the same reaction every time. Because they can't get anywhere near him. That's a problem. Not to mention, you still have some questions at wide receiver. I know a lot of people like the running back combo now. Okay, good. You got Tannehill. There's always going to be a question mark next to him. There just is. I think he did a fine job. He's probably going to continue to do a fine job, but what if he gets hurt? And they want to say that the Titans are top five in the power rankings. I just don't agree with it.
So we put out a poll question at ESPN 102.5 The Game on Twitter, at 102.5 The Game. Poll question is, do you feel the Titans are a top five team in the National Football League? 70% saying they're top 10, not top five. 24% say yes, absolutely. 6% say not even a top 10 team.
There you go. Interesting.
So you would you have Tampa Bay number five after those top four?
I would have them. See, I would take the Packers out of the top 10. I would have them on just the outside. I would have the Titans in the top 10. I'd probably have the Bucks around 6. But I don't love having the Bills.
Okay, so then who's your fifth team?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't love having the Bills in the top 5.
So then is Tampa Bay your number 5?
By default, yes. I hate power rankings. I hate that you make me do this. Yes. Yes. I would have them 5th.
Okay, Tampa Bay 5. I'm putting Dallas at 5.
Well, that warms my heart that you would do that.
Yeah. I said that just for you, Chase. No, I mean, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott, Dak Prescott on offense. You're going to have an NFC East that the Giants are still in no man's land. The Redskins are still in no man's land. Who knows what the Eagles are going to be. If they can play 16 games this year, I would look at the Cowboys at potentially winning 11 or 12 games.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, I feel a lot better after the draft. I was texting with some Cowboys fans, and we were feeling pretty good about it. So, because like you said about that division, that should make it make it a little bit easier on him, but you still got to play the game, so we will see. He is Ryan Porth. I am Chase McCabe. It is the Rundown. When we come back, there is a plan that has, once again, we're talking reporters and leaking things out, but with Major League Baseball that could see them return in June. We'll lay it out for you and what that could mean. when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on 102.5 The Game is for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. So Major League Baseball, you know, we've talked about them a lot, Ryan, through this. Of there have been some plans of, okay, could they play in Arizona? Could they then just go to the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League and start the season that way, all without fans? But now there seems to be another plan that could potentially be on the table. And I know several baseball writers have put stuff out there, but Bob Nightingale of USA Today put an article out yesterday that laid out a plan that would basically say that in late June, baseball comes back. They all play in their home stadiums. They don't have fans. They realign the divisions to go to a three-division league, basically getting rid of the NL and the AL, and they put all the teams in the same divisions that, you know, are close together. They'll maintain some rivalries, but basically our two teams, the Braves and the Reds, would be in the Central Division. They would be in the same division. And so it would jumble things up, but I think that would be exciting for a year, but it would also mean that baseball is back. And, oh, by the way, they could play 100 games at least.
That would definitely be nice if they can fit in 100 games. You know, I haven't read the full story. I've glanced at it and skimmed through it. It's definitely a radical idea to get the season in. And, you know, this is one thing that I also want to talk with Greg Wyshynski about coming up at 9:30 is, you know, they have a similar idea to finish the regular season in terms of having hub cities. You know, if, for instance, the Preds have two games left in the regular season against the Flyers.
Yep.
Like, if the Central Division games are in Minnesota and the Metropolitan Division games are in, say, Raleigh, like, is it the Flyers traveling to Minnesota to play the Preds in a home game in Minnesota? Like, that, I think that is all just fascinating to me, and we'll get into all of that with Greg Wyshynski at 9:30, but, you know, Major League Baseball and how they can pull this off, it feels like every week or every 2 weeks the idea is changing. And, yep. You know, Ken Rosenthal also put out an article on The Athletic detailing all of this. And no matter what the details are of Major League Baseball returning, whether it's Bob Nightingale's report of 3-10 team divisions, all geographically based, or Ken Rosenthal basically saying, you know, home stadiums, maybe they have to start in Arizona or Florida, but teams playing in their home stadiums and there's just no fans. No matter what, it feels like the timeline that Major League Baseball is shooting for is late June, early July.
Yeah, because they would have to, you know, similar to what the NHL would have to do, they would have to have some sort of a spring training to get the pitchers, you know, back going again, get everybody back in the shape that they were, because they mm-hmm. were about to start the regular season. Everybody was warmed up. Well, now they're not. So they're going to have to go through that again. But just to reiterate, each team would play in their own stadium. There would be travel involved, but they would realign the divisions. So obviously you have both the Yankees and Mets in the same division. You have the Red Sox. There's not a lot of travel involved, or you don't have to go all that far. So they're limiting that. And then all the teams out west would be in the Western Division, East, West, Central. So I like that. Now, the questions that I have that haven't been answered, do you have a DH? I would assume you do.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
I would assume that you would just have a DH across the board, which if they do that, that means that's going to be the life from now on, because I don't think they go back.
I don't know if you can say that 100%, though. I do think it's
– I would lean towards it.
It is.
I don't care. I mean, I like small ball.
I think MLB would look at it as kind of an experiment of what is this like with NL teams having a DH.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a National League guy. I'm a National League, you know, purist, but so I like the strategy involved of having the pitcher hit and playing small ball and bunting, but would I lose sleep over it if they came out and said, yeah, the DH is going to be in across the board? No. I mean, I wouldn't. So I think it's unique that you have it in one league and you don't in the other, but this conversation, I mean, it would appear, at least, you know, and I'm assuming, but I would think that this is just for a year. This is just to get through this season,
well,
and
yeah,
then everything goes back to the way it was. But I think it's unique. It would be fun. You create something different. I mean, think about, you know, having, like I said, our two teams in the same division, the Reds and the Braves. You know, how many games do they play? But then you got the Royals that are in there. You could have, like, so you'd have the Royals and the Cardinals in the same division. You have the Tigers there too, both Chicago teams. I think that would be pretty cool. And it would, you know, you could create some made for TV events. Like I said, you would start without fans, but hopefully, you never know, by the end of the season, you're having fans in the stadium, at least in some capacity. But this is just one of the plans that are out there right now. But I will caution everybody, because as Bob Nightingale starts his article, he goes, maybe it's a dream scenario. Maybe it's premature to get excited. Then again, maybe it just might work. So we'll see. I don't know. But I'm glad to see that they have thrown another plan out there. I didn't love the idea of just everybody being in Arizona. I like this a lot better because teams are in their home stadiums.
So this plan that Bob Nightingale has reported on for USA Today, MLB is considering the 3-division, 10-team plan in which teams play only within their division.
Yep.
And it's a concept gaining support among owners and executives. So here would be the divisions. The East division would be Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Nationals, Orioles, Phillies, Pirates, Blue Jays, Rays, Marlins. The Central division would be the Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Cardinals, Royals, Reds, Indians, Twins, Braves, and Tigers. And then the rest in the West being the Dodgers, Angels, Giants, A's, Padres, D-backs, Rockies, Rangers, Astros, and Mariners. Interesting concept.
Yeah. But look, this goes back to what we have been saying, and that is, at least they have a plan. At least they're doing something. At least that they're coming up with some concept and keeping the discussion going. Will it actually happen? Who knows? My guess is this plan that got laid out yesterday probably won't be the one that actually happens. But if it is, I like it. I mean, I like that they're doing something, and it's exciting. It creates different conversation because you can build some rivalries. We're going to have Greg Wyshynski coming up in just a second to talk the NHL plan. Nothing really new from what we laid out yesterday, but I bring up this of how much these leagues are talking to each other. Baseball not officially rolls out this plan, but it gets out. How much do you think the NHL is looking at something like this going, okay, I kind of like that concept. We can tweak ours a little bit to mirror theirs.
I think those leagues are all talking to each other. You know, I heard on a conference call yesterday that these leagues are talking to each other at least once a week, that the four major sports, NBA, NHL, MLB, and NFL, are on a conference call once a week, hashing out the different ideas, at least once a week, hashing out the different ideas that they're coming up with internally, seeing when the other leagues are targeting certain dates to open facilities or return to practices or things like that. So I do think those leagues are consistently in communication, and the more they can communicate, I think the better.
Completely agree with that. We will get the latest from the NHL with Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. He will join us next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's clobbering time. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth. We say hello to our good pal, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Greg, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? It is indeed clobbering time. This is a very good intro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I thought you would appreciate that. Marquise playing that back at the studio, so I knew that you would appreciate it. So you and Emily Kaplan, your colleague there at ESPN, kind of laid out where we are in all of this with when the season could come back. Is it going to come back? What are some things in conversations that you have had with people around the league? Are you getting the sense of that people are getting antsy? They're like, we just need a resolution at this point to decide, are we going to worry about finishing this season, or are we just going to focus on next season? Where are people within the NHL right now?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, people are getting antsy just to see if they can maybe get some clarity on when and if this is going to happen. I mean, you got to remember a lot of this has to do with when we can get up to speed and how long we're going to need to get the players ready and how long you're going to need to coordinate all this stuff if we're going to do these sort of hub ideas of doing the rest of the season at centralized locations. So there's a lot that goes into it. But, you know, more than anything else, I think that you're hearing more and more people on the team side, on the general manager side, and also, you know, some people within the league power structure, really putting an emphasis on not affecting next season in a variety of ways. I mean, first of all, the timing of next season, the idea that, you know, there's some talk now of the season potentially even starting in December and what a truncated schedule like that could look like, and do we really want to play into next July with the cup final and, you know, mess around with the calendar like that. Concerns about the money. If they don't complete the postseason this year, the money that they've already been paid by the television contracts that they have, they're going to have to put that as credits against next season's revenues. So they don't want to do that. And then just sort of the uncertainty about the fans. And that's the real big issue that you're hearing more and more about, is the idea of, if we're going to play 2021, well, let's do it at a point where we know we can get people in the building, because otherwise there's no reason to open up for some teams. I mean, some teams are going to probably make more money not operating than operating without fans in the building. So that's the thing you're hearing more and more about, I think, is focus on what next season looks like, just as much as you hear what the summer is going to look like.
Yeah, and I get the whole money conversation. I thought that you put it best when you were laying this out in your article of, you, why not just cancel the season and focus on next year? Money. I mean, that's really why. I mean, it's $1 billion just about that they could be dealing with. So what do you think about the whole, I guess, the division plan of having hubs for the division? I don't know if you have seen what various writers in baseball have put out, that they could play in their home stadiums but realign the divisions to be closer together, you know, the geography all laying out that way. So what do you think about the idea of possibly having division hubs?
I think it's a great – I think, you know, as far as the ideas of trying to get this season completed this summer during what's going to still be a pandemic, I mean, it's the best idea I've heard. It's a lot better than – trying to move everybody to North Dakota for a while in an arena where it's not even, you know, set up to handle the volume of teams you're talking about. The things I like about it are the idea that they're going to be able to do their best to try to control the environments. And if you look at what European soccer is doing right now, they're restricting everything from how many people are cooking meals to the players to how many players can practice together, you know, how frequent the testing needs to be. I think if you're going to try to attempt this, you have to attempt it in a way where you can cluster the players together and try to put them in the most controlled environment that you can. I also like the idea of trying to play multiple games per day, you know, stack them up like we do when we have the Olympics or the World Cup, started at noon and play throughout the day. And that gives people stuck at home a pretty interesting product to watch and in some cases to wager on. But there's also some real question marks. I mean, you know, Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, said, if we get a positive test, we'll take that person, put them in isolation, and just move on. Well, maybe it's not that simple. You know, it's going to be really hard to control that environment. And then, you know, the bigger issue, I think, for the players right now is the idea that if they're actually going to finish the regular season, which I don't think that they should, and they're going to do this postseason, you're talking about a situation where players could be away from their families for months on end. And is that really fair? So the perfect format probably will be something where they're going to train locally and then go on and go to these hubs and finish out the season. I just hope that for the NHL's sake that they're not going to try to do the regular season, because the more teams you try to include in this plan, the harder it's going to be. And just cut to the chase, expand the playoffs, and go from there.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN.com, NHL senior writer with us. So, Greg, if they do just go straight to the playoffs, do you have a sense of how they will or should determine the postseason teams or even expand the playoffs from 16 to a larger number?
Well, they've been, you know, modeling out some ideas for months now, and teams have been coming to the NHL with their own ideas. I'm sure the Leafs' idea is just give us the cup. let's just not play the playoffs. But no, I think 20 teams is the one that makes the most sense to me. You expand out the conference playoff field to 10 teams apiece. You do a little play in action, 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9, either in a series or in a one game and you're in kind of situation. I do think it's important that if you don't finish the regular season, that you do expand the playoffs and allow some of these bubble teams that otherwise might have made it if the season had been completed. Because, I mean, you look at the Western Conference, and these teams are like a point or two out right now. It's conceivable that this thing could look a lot different if we had played out the regular season. So seed them through points percentage. I think that's the only fair way to do it. Expand the playoffs to include some of these bubble teams. And hey, if you really wanted to get greedy and rope in a couple of cities that could bring a lot of attention and dollars to the coffer, if you go 24 teams, Montreal and Chicago get in. So you could do it a number of different ways. I just think that the thing that they shouldn't do is try to complete the regular season. I wrote about this last month. You got fans waiting to get refunds on their tickets for games that haven't been canceled yet. You have workers whose teams have promised them money if and when the games are canceled. They get their money if the games are canceled. There's just too many things that are kind of fraught with problems in my mind with trying to complete the regular season, that they should just scrap it and then figure out something else.
How much of this is driven by potentially NBC being their biggest TV partner, having all that time in July and August now on their family of networks with the Olympics being postponed? How much of this resumption of a season or postseason is being driven by NBC?
Well, it changed the math. And I don't think NBC is driving it, but it definitely changed the math of the NHL, wherein, you know, when they were starting to look at the possibilities before the Olympics were postponed, they were looking at that late July, early August window and saying to themselves, well, my God, like, do we have to finish what we're trying to do before that? Do we have to play it completely after that? Because there was simply no way they could do what they wanted to do with the Olympics going on. One, because they'd be competing for attention. Two, because the Summer Olympics gobble up all of the broadcast hours on NBC. I mean, they're throwing stuff on the Golf Network, you know, during the Olympics. So once that was postponed, it really did kind of change the landscape for the NHL. I've had multiple executives tell me that it really opened up the possibilities of how late they could play in the summer or how late they could go in the summer to restart. So it's not so much NBC driving the decision as much as it is the Olympic postponement really kind of opening up the options for the NHL in ways they didn't anticipate.
Do you get a sense of what the drop-dead date is to determine whether they can finish the postseason?
No, and they don't have one either. I mean, they're going to push this thing as deep as they can. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's, you know, June 1st and we don't even know what's going on yet. I think what they envision is that teams are going to need about 3 weeks. Players are going to need about 3 weeks to train and get ready. These guys haven't been on ice for a long time. I mean, most of them, guys in Sweden are doing pretty well, but everybody else is kind of in a pickle right now. So they're going to need some time for training. They're going to need some time to get on the same page, get back into playing shape. The one thing that you do hear uniformly from a lot of these players, Connor McDavid most interestingly, is that, you know, if you plop them right into the intensity of a playoff series, you're going to end up with a bunch of minor leaguers playing by game 7 because everybody's going to be hurt. So the players are cognizant of that. And the good news for anybody who's concerned about their health and well-being, be it injuries or be it exposure to coronavirus or things like that, the NHLPA does have to sign off on whatever format the NHL chooses. So the players are going to have a voice in this. It's not simply just going to be, you know, the boss, you know, slamming his gavel and being like, get back to work, guys.
Greg, before we let you go, so often we have the conversation about, well, the playoff format, you know, could they change it? Could they tweak the divisions? Could they realign? You know, all this stuff. It always comes up in sports. I understand there is a bigger picture here. They, you know, obviously you have to worry about the world and not just the NHL. But could they use this as a time to experiment a little bit about what the league could look like moving forward?
Sure. Oh, man. I'm a proponent of expanding the playoffs. I mean, I grew up with a league where something ridiculous like 16 out of 20 teams are making it, right? So, like, the idea that only half the league qualifies for the postseason is alien to me as much as it's kind of the norm for a lot of people who've come to the NHL in the last maybe like 10 or 15 years. So the idea that maybe they can expand the playoffs and give people a taste of what a play-in series or play-in game could look like, that's exciting to me. I think it's a necessity given how this season's going. And for me, the expansion of the playoffs always comes down to one thing. You know, can you do it in a way that preserves the integrity of what I think is a perfect 16-team tournament? And I think you can, because I think if you go 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9 play-in games or play-in series, it really does then keep the integrity of the larger tournament while also kind of roping in some extra playoff teams. And that's cool. I just, you know, when Seattle comes in, the idea that, you know, only half the league gets in is just, it's too much. I mean, I think it's time to really look at how to expand the playoffs, but do it in a way that's not going to mean, you know, bye weeks and things like that, or pick your own opponent or gimmicks like that. Just have some play-in games, expand the field, and just make this thing a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, pick your own opponent. We're going wrestling there. I mean, and I love wrestling, just like you, but I don't know if wrestling.
It also doesn't work because it's cowardice. Like,
yeah.
You know, GMs don't want to put their jobs on the line by picking the wrong team to play.
Right.
I mean, we've already seen it play out in the minor leagues that way. So that whole scheme that's been floated around is just, it's a non-starter in my mind because it's been proven not to be effective.
Completely agree with you there. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, ESPN.com. Hey, we appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Thanks.
Always does great work. And a lot of stuff there, Ryan. I mean, look, the whole idea, and I seem to bring that up, and I've thought about this a lot of, you know, let's look at this from a positive standpoint. You know, this is a bad time, and it stinks that we had to pause the season, but you do have a rare opportunity to play around with things and be able to see if you can expand the playoffs and how it would work. But I know you had a thought of something that stood out to you during that.
Yeah, so Greg was pretty adamant that he doesn't want to see the regular season finished, wants to limit the amount of teams that they are putting in this this proposed situation of finishing the 2019-20 season. And I completely understand where Greg is coming from, but if they do go that route and they start with just the playoffs, I think the teams in the same hub cities have to have some sort of scrimmage or, you know, something that can resemble regular season games to get them up to speed before they play night one of the playoffs. Because if you're going to sell this as being night one of the playoffs, game one of a 5-game series or a 7-game series, I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you're the NHL, if you're just going to have 3 weeks of practice and then boom, it's time for playoff hockey. Because we see how long it could take for teams to get up to speed, even after preseason games. So I understand where Greg is coming from, but I do think the league has to have some sort of strategy to get these players up to speed that can at least somewhat resemble playoff hockey when the playoffs actually start.
What if you just got everybody? Because if you look at the standings, I think the most that any team has played are like 71 games. Some are as low as, I think, 68. You just give everybody like 3 or 4 games, but get everybody to the same number of games. That's how you quote unquote finish the regular season, and then you go into an expanded playoff.
Maybe, but then you're still involving all 31 teams at that point, which I'm not against. I'm not against doing that, but I do see where Greg is coming from and saying,
but if you're Detroit, you're like, really? Why do I
exactly? Want to, why does Detroit have to play 2 more games?
Right.
After all this, they sit on their butt for 3 or 4 months, and then they have to play 2 games.
Yeah. No, like, I get that. Sense. I get that completely. So, I this is where I use the cop out answer of you're not going to make everybody happy. You aren't, and you just have to figure it out and move on and see what happens. It is the Rundown. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When we return, we'll get back into a conversation we had earlier about the power rankings in the NFL. NFL.com has the Titans 5th. Where would Ryan and I put the Tennessee Titans in a power ranking? We will discuss that next here on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. In normal times, 11 million children go hungry every day in America. But these aren't normal times. The coronavirus pandemic has sent unemployment soaring. Without paychecks, millions of families cannot afford to buy food. You can join the urgent fight against hunger. Tomorrow, you will be able to text FEED to 95819, and a donation link will be sent immediately to your phone. You can also donate to RadioCares.org. Welcome back into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. Earlier in the show, we discussed the NFL.com's power rankings that had the Titans fifth after the NFL draft. Now, Ryan and I disagreed with that. I think we both believe they should be in the top 10, but having them fifth, I think that's a little bit too high. So we decided to revisit this, and you're welcome to weigh in at 615-737-1025 via the phone or text. We have come up with our top 10, Ryan.
Yes, we have.
And I believe they're going to be different. So I'll let you go first. How would you rank the top 10 teams via the power rankings in your mind?
So the top 10, I said earlier that there's a tier one after four teams. So my tier one, I would go Kansas City, Baltimore, New Orleans, San Francisco in that order. 1, 2, 3, 4. Number five, made the case earlier for Dallas to be number five in the power rankings right now because of the addition to CeeDee Lamb to that offense, I think is going to be really good. I also feel Mike McCarthy is a big upgrade over Jason Garrett at head coach, and I think you would agree with that, Chase.
Oh, absolutely.
So Dallas,
you would be a big upgrade.
Well, that's not saying much. Dallas number five for me. Number six, I have Buffalo, just based on the defense being so nasty like it is. I would put Buffalo at six. I would put Minnesota at seven. You know, if they had a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins, I think Minnesota is number five on this list. So Minnesota seven, Tampa Bay eight, Tennessee nine, Indianapolis 10.
Okay. So I thought that we might disagree a little bit with the top four, but we're actually in sync. I have the Chiefs, Ravens, Saints, 49ers. I don't think the 49ers are the second best team in the league, but I still have them in the top five.
Okay.
I do have the Bucs at fifth because of the additions that they made and their head coach. I believe that Bruce Arians is one of the best underrated head coaches in the National Football League. I have the Cowboys sixth, the Titans seventh, the Vikings eighth. I really, really like their draft. I agree with you what you said about Kirk Cousins, but I really, really like how they drafted this year. The Bills ninth and the Colts 10th.
Okay, so we have the same top 10 teams,
yep,
just in a different order, really.
Yep. And I looked through it. So, okay, why did you take Green Bay out?
I took Green Bay out because in 2020, that team isn't going to be as good as it was in 2019. There was a lot of smoke and mirrors action going on with the Green Bay Packers last year where, yes, they were winning games, but they weren't winning games convincingly against bad teams, and they got lucky in a couple games. I would say the fact that they didn't spend one stupid pick on a wide receiver and the fact that they didn't really draft for 2020, I think Green Bay takes a step back this season.
Yeah, I agree because they are not getting Aaron Rodgers any help, and then they drafted his replacement. I mean, you think that guy – I mean, I'm not questioning Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, he's going to give it his all. That's just what he does. He's wired that way. He's going to go out and play. He's probably not going to be excited to play for that team and that coach. And the relationship, I would say, is not very good right now, if I had to guess. But I still think that he's going to go out and do what he does. He doesn't have any help. It's almost like looking at Brady and the Patriots last year. They just don't have anything around him and didn't do anything to help him. And that's where Aaron Rodgers is now. And when I say that Bruce Arians is one of the most underrated coaches, I think Matt LaFleur might be one of the most overrated after last year. I didn't love the hire when it happened. I was shocked when it happened, in fact. And then I was even more shocked that they went as far as they did and had the season that they did under Matt LaFleur. I think they're going to come crashing down this year.
See, if I were Green Bay, you know, the A.J. Dillon pick is almost as bad as the Jordan Love pick when you look at 2020, because you have Aaron Jones as a really good running back to put with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Jones, I think, has a lot of talent. So you draft A.J. Dillon. Now you think that they're going to be a running team, which is not maximizing Aaron Rodgers' potential at his age. And, yes, I know at that point in the draft, there weren't a lot of – you know, there was a big wide receiver run in round two before the Packers drafted where they did at, I believe it was 62 overall, right behind the Titans. But they still could have gotten a receiver like Antonio Gibson out of Memphis, who can almost – play that Randall Cobb role that Randall Cobb played in Green Bay when he was at his peak with the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have drafted Lynn Bowden out of Kentucky, who also went in the third round, just like Antonio Gibson, who could do a lot of the same things as Randall Cobb.
I think that's going to be a sneaky good pick, by the way.
Maybe, but he's going to the Raiders, and yeah. What draft picks the Raiders make are actually good nowadays. Sorry, Marquise. But
I don't think he'll argue with you.
when you look at what the Packers did, I just don't see how they improved for the 2020 season. So we both agree the Packers outside of the top 10 in these power rankings. Neither of us have Seattle in the top 10. Seattle with Russell Wilson is always – you can always rely on them being in the playoff chase or in the playoffs altogether. I didn't love their draft either. So
yeah, Daryl Taylor, I like Daryl Taylor, but I didn't like him as a second-round pick. Could be wrong. Pete Carroll knows a lot more than I do, but we'll see. But I agree with you. I didn't like their draft. I have them just on the outside. I would put them probably 11th, but I don't think they're good enough to go in the top 10 yet. But, you know, we've been trying to write them off for years, and they keep sticking around. So I who knows what's going to happen there, but – I think that looking at power rankings on April 29th, this is the world in which we live right now. So
hey, we don't have playoff hockey or basketball to talk about or current baseball regular season games, so might as well look at or break down someone's power rankings from NFL.com.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of The Rundown. If you missed anything, you can check it out at thegamenashville.com. Ryan, have a great day. Marquise, you too. But stick around. Darren Donican Chase, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.